Welcome to today's interview on Brighteon.com. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon. And as you know, I'm an advocate of learning to grow your own food. I'm an advocate of true environmental protection, that is protecting the ecosystems that support not just humanity, but every living system on the planet. And our guest today is a first-time guest here, but a very special person. An actual scientist joins us today, Dr. Elaine Ingham, who has written numerous scientific papers. She was recommended by Kevin at the Patriot Green Products, because we've talked a lot about microbes in the soil and what it takes to actually have a sustainable civilization, not to mention the ecosystems. So Dr. Elaine Ingham, welcome to the show. Your website is soilfoodweb.com, and welcome. I really look forward to this.
Great, thank you. I look forward to this as well.
So give us a little, since this is the first time you've been a guest with us here, and let me give your website again, soilfoodweb.com, but give us a little background into your focus, what you do, and sort of just an overview of your scientific writing and research.
Probably best exemplifies why I do what I do, because when I was going for my PhD at Colorado State University, the most interesting topic I could see that I wanted to do, left over from my master's degree at Texas A&M and working with a group at Colorado State, trying to understand what's going on in the soil. And of course, for me, it was you have to understand all of these organisms. We've got to see what it is they do and figure out, well, what they're doing. My major professor told me to go around to all of the professors in like soil science, agronomy, all the different growing plant departments on at Colorado State University, and to tell them what I wanted to do for my PhD work, which was to determine a method for distinguishing total fungi from active fungi.
Really?
Because it's just the active organisms that do anything.
Uh-huh.
And so the total, you know, why would you really need to know total fungal biomass when you just want to know active fungal biomass? So that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to figure out a methodology for being able to identify both the active and the totals, and then apply it to the real world. Which soils have lots of fungi, and you know, why would we care?
Right.
So, why, you know, you don't have as many fungi here, and so what does that mean? And I wanted to figure all of that out. So I went around to all those professors, and to a man, they all looked at me like I was crazy when I got done telling them about what I wanted to do for my PhD. And they said, no, you can't do that. You're going to have wasted your 4 years here at Colorado State University, because those microorganisms in the soil, they don't do anything.
Are you kidding me?
No, I'm not.
I'm sorry. I just broke out in laughter, but wow.
It's just well, you know, they had other things that they wanted to be putting on the ground. You know, they were doing all kinds of chemical determinations.
Yes.
And which was what was going to kill the weeds, and what was going to kill this disease, and what was going to kill and kill and kill and kill. And that's not the way Mother Nature works.
Right.
She doesn't
right.
go around wiping things off the face of the earth. She gives them the right conditions in which to grow. And so I wanted to learn all of those things, and have spent since when I started my PhD work, it was in 1981. And so I've been working on this topic ever since, and trying to understand what it is that the bacteria and the fungi and the protozoa and the nematodes, all those things that you see in the soil food web, trying to understand what they do and why is it important, and why would a plant want to feed them?
Go ahead. Well, I'm sorry to interrupt, but you're getting into some really big picture stuff here, and I'm so glad to have you on. Let me just start off by saying, you know, I live on a ranch in Texas, and from the day that I purchased this ranch, there hasn't been a single molecule of a pesticide or herbicide or fungicide that has touched any of that. And as a result, the food abundance, the habitat for rabbits and armadillos and falcons and foxes, and it has just exploded. It's an amazing thing now to watch it come back. But then I drive around to these bare cattle ranches where they've clear cut everything, and they've let the cows eat it down to nothing, and then they've treated it with 2,4-D, and it's just like it's a devastation. It's a desert of death, basically. Yep. Right? And the difference, I mean, we live in the same county, and the difference is just night and day, night and day. Yeah. It's astonishing to me, but I just want to offer you that to start with.
Yep. And, you know, and the difference of what's going on this side of the road and what's going on that side of the road. And when you work with Mother Nature, you're going to have the beautiful side. You try to kill everything, and you don't have anything left for your cows or your horses or sheep or whatever.
That's right.
And the other astounding thing to me was always, we're putting all of these toxic chemicals on our food. And
yes.
Eating that food. So it's, well, of course you're going to have all these problems and digestive systems, and your this or that organs doesn't manage to hold out after, you know, 20, 30, 50, 60 years.
But this is the industrial approach to agriculture has been treating the soil as useless and then intervening with, you know, nitrogen fertilizers, but also weed killers, GMOs, glyphosate. And, oh, I forgot to mention, by the way, in our lab, you know, we do glyphosate testing. Just the other day, we found the highest glyphosate level we've ever found in organic black beans. We got 650 nanograms per milliliter, which is, for the audience, parts per billion. And for glyphosate, that's high. That's really high for glyphosate. 650 parts per billion in organic black beans, which is not even a GMO crop. So there you go, Dr. Elaine. We're seeing this where it doesn't belong.
Yeah. Yeah, and it's because growers are told to go out and apply it, and if it doesn't kill off what you want killed, then you've got to come back and put on another amount.
Yeah.
And 80% of anything we spray on the surface of a denuded, well, it's not really soil, it's dirt.
Right.
On the top of denuded dirt won't hold on to those materials. What doesn't get used right away is going to just wash down the hill to the grower, to the next grower, to the next. And then we're destroying all of our rivers, our lakes, our streams, all the way out to the ocean. And it's killing things in the ocean.
Exactly.
And
the dead zones.
Yeah. How are we, you know, human beings, if you aren't aware that we rely on all these good things not to be contaminated, and yet they're becoming horribly contaminated, human beings are writing themselves out of the history of this planet.
That is a very powerful statement that you just said. Human beings are writing themselves out of the history of this planet. I completely agree. In fact, let me ask you this. Would you agree or disagree that if we don't change the way that we treat soils, then we will not have a sustainable civilization on this planet?
Yep. And pretty soon, there's not going to be human beings to have a civilization.
Because it seems like we're running on kind of the momentum, the gifts that we had by Mother Nature here. But, you know, all the life that was in the soil, for example, when the pioneers came to modern day United States of America, wow, everything was rich and the soil was teeming with microbes, as you say, and the rivers were rich with animals and habitat and ecosystems. But we've been kind of mining that down into non-existence. And there's a limit of how far you can push a system before it just breaks.
Because where most of the nutrients that weren't in rocks and pebbles and parent material, when most of those nutrients were stored at the surface of the soil in organic matter forms, and then the roots would germinate, all the good nutrients, all the organisms they needed were right there at the surface of the soil. And if you take away the bacteria, fungi, protozoa, and nematodes, you can't cycle nutrients. The only kinds of nutrients that really hang out in our soils are mineral and inside the organic matter. And so your plant puts out the exudates, the sugars and proteins that the bacteria and fungi want to eat, So the plant puts out those foods, but with a message held inside of what the plant wants to have these organisms, the bacteria and fungi, go out and find those nutrients, pull them out of the silica bilayer of the sands, the silts, and clays, pull those nutrients out, hold them in the bodies of those bacteria and fungi. It's kind of just like having a pantry. Right up, no close, snuggled next to the root system of your plant, there's the storage. Along come protozoa, and then maybe nematodes, maybe microarthropods, and they eat those bacteria. Some of them, not all of them. There's only so much a hungry microarthropod can eat. And so you've got both there, and all of those microorganisms that got eaten. There's way too much nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur, magnesium, calcium, sodium, potassium, iron, zinc, you name it. All of the minerals that your plant requires are there in the right form then for the plant, the bacteria, not the bacteria, come on, the next, the predators, the protozoa and the nematodes will release those nutrients because they're excess. There's too much of all of those things in the bacterial and fungal bodies to have the predators hold on to it all. So those predators just dump it out into the ground as we like to call it the poop loop. Because all
Right.
those nutrients are now ready for plants to take up. And usually it's just simple diffusion that pulls them inside the root. Now your plant has all the things it needs. If it didn't get everything, it would put out another exudate. And the bacteria and fungi, different sets of them, would go out and pull those nutrients from the sand, silt, and clays. Those sand, silts, and clays get replenished every year with those soluble nutrients so that they're holding on and not letting go. Those microorganisms are in there right away, tying these up in the form of, a pantry. So
Wow.
that's how nutrients site isn't nature clever? Isn't it
It's
amazing?
miraculous. If people only understood the gift of what we've been given, we would treat our food webs and farms differently. But that brings us to such a critical question, is how do we even begin to change the paradigm under which modern mechanized monoculture operates? Which is all about producing, I call it, shallow food. It's often nutrient depleted food. It looks like food, but it's not actually what I would consider food. And it's kind of like mining the minerals out of the soil, and it's killing off the microbes. It's applying all these toxic chemicals. And that is the model. I mean, that is absolutely the model that you hear everywhere. Even, again, I live in Texas. I talk to farmers and ranchers, and most of them are indoctrinated by the chemical corporations to say, oh, you need to apply this and that and that. I had a naturalist guy came out years ago and looked at our grass, and he said, you know what? You need to start over. You need to change all the grass here. And I said, well, how would you do that? He said, you would spray glyphosate on all the whole field. You would kill all the grass and then you would reseed it. I'm like, well, that's not going to happen. But this is the way people operate.
It's what they were taught in college, and aren't all our college professors, experts at what they do? Well, I think they're kind of experts at taking money from those chemical companies
Yes.
to say, oh, yes, this is the way you do it. This is what you have to do. Where we get an understory of growing plants, maybe no more than maybe 1 inch, 2 inches, 3 inches, we make certain we've got, 50, 60 different species of low growing understory covering the soil completely so that you don't have compaction anymore. When you have uncovered bare soil, a raindrop falling, 5 miles up, by the time you get 5 miles down here, at the rate of acceleration due to gravity, when they hit the ground, bam! And it's just compressing, killing microorganisms that you need to have and compressing down. So that water, that drop of water that finally makes it to the surface, moving through can only go down an inch or two, and then it's got to start going sideways, and they're going to take all their soluble nutrients that's in your soil. They're going to be taking all those toxic chemicals that are in that. Well, it's not really soil, is it? It's dirt at this point. And down the hill go your nutrients and your organisms, and it's killing everything on the way that it's taking down the hill. So
But back to my question. I mean, how do we possibly change this? I mean, hopefully the answer isn't wait for a total crisis where we have mass starvation and food scarcity, and then maybe people will learn. I mean, how do we not have that crisis?
we need to teach people how to grow plants without pesticides, without inorganic foods, inorganic new inorganic nutrients, and we get the biology back held in the soil. We get the organisms back that build structure, that hold all that water so it doesn't go down racing down the hill. Get the organisms in your soil that can degrade the glyphosate. There are a whole bunch of species of bacteria and fungi that decompose glyphosate as long as they have other food. But that's been one of the big mistakes of, what happens when you put glyphosate into dirt? There's nothing there to eat it. There's nothing there that's going to take it away. It just rushes downhill as the water goes with it. So we need to get back that biology into the soil that will decompose all these toxins. 2,4-D, DDT, not a problem. We got organisms that will decompose that, but they got to have food. So you
Well,
got to know.
exactly. I'm glad you mentioned the microbiological breakdown of glyphosate. I think one of the byproducts is AMPA, because we test for AMPA in the lab as well. And if the microbes do their job, it keeps breaking it down, and you get, like, I guess, ammonia at one point. And it's real simple stuff.
You'll typically get ammonium, which is not toxic to plants, but ammonia. Yeah, go ahead, breathe a nose full of that, and how long can you stay alive doing that? So, we're going to put your face down in the ground, and you get to breathe the oxygen from the soil. You wouldn't live very long if it's dirt.
Yeah, no
So,
kidding.
we've got to teach people not to listen to people who want to sell them something they don't need. Pretty much all of the nutrients that your plant needs is in the soil. It doesn't have to have outside interventions. When you think of this, the big tall trees in California, the sequoia, the redwoods, it takes 10 people to wrap themselves around the tree. Every year as it grows, it pulls up all the nutrients that it requires from the soil and sequesters those nutrients in that ring, that growth ring, which is well over the amount of nutrients that your crop plant growing at the best it ever could, it still doesn't even come close to what those giant trees are taking out of the soil every year. And if it's true that the plants are sucking all the nutrients out of the soil, then how can those redwood trees, how can those sequoia stay alive after 2,000 years growing in the same place, growing in these, there's a whole herd of those kinds of trees right there, and yet they're perfectly healthy. You have to have the right organisms in the soil to feed them and go through nutrient cycling. But don't tell me that the result of growing crop plants year after year after year is going to suck those nutrients out of the soil and end up in something that you can't grow.
Well, this is really profound. And yeah, I have a lot of questions about that too. But I think so. I mean, right offhand, I would answer that at least some of what that tree is doing is creating carbon structures, using carbon dioxide through photosynthesis. But obviously, it's getting trace minerals out of the soil, and it's getting its water and so on, and consuming other nutrients at the same time. But are you saying that we could feed the world without applying any outside NPK to the farms, just by protecting the soils?
By having the proper life in that soil,
Wow.
those organisms are a surface layer on the surface of all rocks, pebbles, boulders, parent material. And those organisms are slowly but surely pulling off the top layer and leave them behind, sand, the silt, clay with bilayers, silica bilayers, chock full of those nutrients. And remember, every year, water moving by will replenish those nutrients in those the sand, silt, and clay. Thank you for being patient with me. It takes
All
about
good.
20 seconds for that's what this is what happens when you turn 70, you know? So I hope you put up with me.
we're honored to have you here. This is such a fascinating discussion. So one question that I have is, you know, sometimes, for example, looking at the history of agriculture, at least what I learned was the farms on the edge of the Nile River, they would do much better after a season of flooding where new nutrients were deposited by the river. Or I've even seen cases where there have been tsunamis of ocean water inundating coastal farms surrounding the Indian Ocean, for example. And although all that salinity might at first seem toxic, but then subsequent seasons had much more mineral mass to grow with, and the crops flourished. Is that consistent with what you're talking about as well?
Yep, that's part of all of this. And when you get to different parts of the planet, different things are functioning to bring to the surface the nutrients that the plants require. And so, remember that every year all of the leaf material falls to the ground. So if
yes.
you're in a temperate environment, even if you're in a tropical environment, you still have a significant number of the leaves that fall to the ground, chock full of nutrients.
True.
Every single cell in that plant had to have the proper sets of nutrients in order to have existed. So we have massive amounts of nutrients still sitting on the surface of the soil at the end of a growing season. We just need to hold them, keep them, and then make them available again to the plant. So through a dormant period, the dry season, say in tropical semi-arid or arid areas, you want to have all of your nutrients held in the bacteria and fungi or in organic material so that come springtime, you get that nutrient cycling going and that we've already talked about. So the plant gets its nutrients without having to put out a lot of energy or time or effort to get those nutrients. They've just been giving away those materials that they get from photosynthesis, a nonstop, all of the time source of energy for your plant. The only thing your plant gets from above ground are carbon dioxide and sunlight. That's it.
Right.
All the rest of the nutrients have to come from nutrient cycling in the soil.
So how long does it take for, let's say there's a farmer out there that wants to switch over to regenerative farming, or is that the term you use? I mean, I've heard, you know, permaculture, lots of different ways to talk about it, but.
Yep. I like regenerative because it doesn't exclude people, it includes people. And
okay.
we just have to teach people that they don't need to waste their money by buying all those, you know, inorganic fertilizers and pesticides and all of those things. That's don't need it. Don't till ever again, please, because every time you till, you slice and dice and crush and turn into, you know, just a liquid form in the soil. Every time you go and till your fields, 50% of the beneficial organisms that help your plants resist disease are going to be destroyed in that first time you till your field.
Wow.
What if you turn around and come back through your field again? Well, there's another 50% gone. So now you're at 25% of what you had 10 minutes ago.
But that's fascinating. But getting back to sort of the transition timeline, are there success stories that you can point to where can this be done in 5 years, or does it take 10 years, or, you know, to rebuild one
One.
Really?
Typically, after the first one or two applications of the total diversity of microorganisms that you need are applied, 2 to 3 weeks, you start seeing effects.
No
And if
kidding.
you don't see the effects, then you know that by adding the microorganisms to the soil, they were immediately killed. That's why we use microscopes, because we want to know it sooner than, a week or two. We want to know immediately, are those bacteria, are the fungi growing? Is there food in this ground? What are the protozoa and the nematodes, the microarthropods, are they starting nutrient cycling for your plant? So that we immediately start having, we see those effects. And so right from the very beginning, you can have a turnaround, very rapid, and start getting improved nutrients concentrations. You get rid of the diseases that your plant might have had. You are cycling nutrients. You are building soil structure so the roots can go down as the roots need to go in order to find water in the middle of a drought.
Well, that's critical because, we're often told that the only solution to drought resistance is genetically engineered plants, which is nonsense. You
Yes.
want drought resistance, you need to go this route, regenerative farming. But does your organization, do you offer, a service to analyze people's soils or
Yep, that's what we're
yeah?
training in our facility in Corvallis. We have other people out spread all over the world. If you want to find the closest consultant, just look on the map of the world and choose the consultant that's closest to you, or come to the
Oh,
well,
wow. I'm looking at your map right now. Yeah.
it's almost so dotted out that you can't see what continent you're on. But we're, all the time training more people and people, someone who wants to become know enough to apply this to your backyard, to your garden, to the food that you're growing for yourself. Everything is done virtually, so you don't have to come to Corvallis and live in Corvallis for 4 or 5 years to get through this, and it's not going to take you that long. If you can come home every night and watch, 2 or 3 of the little knot modules, and keep every night just working through it. And most people usually say, this is so exciting to learn that they don't
Wow.
have to live at the beck and call of the chemical companies anymore,
Yeah,
that
no
they can do
kidding.
this all by themselves, cycle your own nutrients. And it just takes understanding the fact that most of the composting ways that you've been taught are not composting ways.
Oh, I want to
They
ask you about that. But hold on a second. Can you show my screen, guys? Because I want to show this. All of these dots, these pins, this is where you can get soil food web lab technicians across the United States. And then you have something different here, a certified consultant. What's the difference?
Certified consultants can go out and do not only the sampling, but look at the results and be able to make recommendations
I
for
see.
what are the different things that you could be doing to get the biology back into the soil so you can realize all these benefits.
Okay, and then another question, but I like to be really practical for people, because I like to give people hands-on things. I see on your website boost of numbers using biocomplete compost and liquids. So do you sell some kind of a microbiology-rich liquid
Yeah,
or yeah?
some of the people who've taken the courses and they're certified to make the compost, the biologically complete compost, is really what you need to do, because you can make all your own additions to the soil by making your own compost using the waste material that you would otherwise, throw away. And, where does all of that waste go? Turn it into really good compost and use that to grow your plants in the next year. So we go through all this training where people learn how to make compost properly. So there are
Oh.
absolutely no detectable human diseases. All those disease-causing organisms are gone. They're not present because we've taken things through conditions that prevent those organisms from growing, and all the beneficials can then eat those bad guys, if you will, and make certain that just the beneficial organisms are being applied onto your soils, onto the roots of your plants, your seeds, above ground. As long as everything has a protective layer over it, a spore of a disease-causing fungus or a bacterium lands on the surface of your leaf, it can never get through that layer of good, healthy organisms that they're getting. The organisms are getting the food from the leaf, they're getting it from the plant, but they're protecting the plant. They're helping in so many different ways that you do not need inorganic fertilizers, pesticides. You don't have to be worried about diseases and pests.
Is there a resource where people can learn the proper way to create compost?
So that's one of the things we do. So in our foundation course number 2, we teach people how to make the proper compost. And then we expect that they're going to, back at home, they're going to collect the starting materials they need in the proper percentages, and then put it together, measure the temperature and the moisture every day. And when you need to turn it, temperature's been high enough, long enough that it's killed all of the pathogens and the pests in the center of the pile, then you have to come and turn it. And so what was on the top is going to go on the bottom. What was in the middle is going to be in the top. And what was on the bottom is now in the middle. You just have to cycle things through that hot middle enough times that you are certain to have killed the human pathogens that will not flourish under that high a temperature
now,
for that length of time.
Okay, that's fascinating. So I'm learning. I mean, you know, I didn't know any of this before we started this interview, but you have courses here. I'm on your website. You have courses, foundation courses. Is that what you're referring to?
So with the foundation courses, FC1 is where we teach you all the background knowledge that you have in order to kind of fit everything together and understand it. And most people that go through say, You taught this in such a way that I could understand it.
Oh, wow.
And, you know, I only had a third grade education, and still they understand it. So I promise that all of the scientific gobbledygook I learned as a graduate student, I don't use it when I speak to the human beings, really. You know, I'm not trying to impress academics anymore. I want to get everybody fed, so that no one goes hungry, no one dies of starvation, no one dies because you're drinking water that's got so much contamination in it that it's going to kill you if you stay and drink it. Ugh.
Well, let me ask you about these courses. Again, practical questions, but is this something, because I know a lot of our viewers are going to be interested, do they attend like real-time broadcasts, or is it they can log in at any time and watch lessons, or how does it work?
They can log in at any time and pull up the next class.
Okay.
Even if you had to stop the class halfway through, still when you come back the next time, you pull up that class, you can fast forward to where you got left off and finish.
So I see.
We teach people then how to make compost, true good compost with all the good guys, not the bad guys, massive diversity.
Yeah.
We then teach them how to make a compost extract, where you just extract the organisms, and then you can apply that in a liquid form instead of a solid form. It's hard to put down solids on the soil surface. So, you know, you can easily convert the compost into a compost extract. And then if you have problems in the above ground part of your plant, you're going to make a tea, which gets the organisms growing rapidly, so they instantly stick to the surface of the leaf or the bottom of the leaf, or it sticks to the on the outside of the fruit or the flowers, or, you know, whatever you're spraying. You have a nice good layer of these organisms that are the organisms that you're supposed to be eating, and getting the inside of all of your digestive system covered with these really beneficial organisms. You aren't going to have to pay for probiotics or prebiotics or post, you know, all the different versions, because as long as you're eating a number of different foods, You're going to get inoculated with all of those beneficial organisms that help you get the nutrition out of your own food.
Right, and also, promote your immune system to function properly and so to make you more resilient against everything that's happening. Okay, this is really fascinating. Let me bring in one other thing that I'm sure you will find horrifying. I've interviewed EPA whistleblower Dr. David Lewis, and I produced that documentary called Biosludged, and our audience knows very well that all over the United States they take the sewage from people and whatever else people flush, and then they take that, and then the cities, they will go out to the farmers and they'll say, "Hey, you want free fertilizer?" And the farmers say, "Oh, it's free? Yeah, sure, dump it over here." And they dump truckload after truckload after truckload of sewage with every human pathogen that you can imagine, by the way, and other crazy stuff that's in there. Dr. Elaine, what's your take on what that does to our farms and soils?
It just accelerates the time that you have to kill everything so that you're not dealing with soil anymore, you're dealing with dirt. It happens even faster. Remember when I said, when you till, 50% of the organisms in your soil are going to be killed. Well, you're going to kill them even faster if you're tilling in those toxic chemicals because, as you said, that was a whole plethora of horrible things that you have to think about. If we've got biosolids, we need to get the microbiology properly working in that material and get rid of all those things that are toxic and not good for the rest of the environment so that at least someday you can have a relatively decent organic material that could be put onto the soil, but you gotta check and make sure you've taken care of all the problem organisms in there and nutrients in there.
Isn't it fascinating that in our society, people who own farms, they think about leaving the farm to their children one day, but for the most part, they think about the monetary value of the farm, the real estate price, or maybe how much corn, GMO corn it can produce. But if you really want to leave an asset to your children, wouldn't it be the soil?
Yep, because that's what makes all the difference in how much yield you're going to have and how good tasting. And those people that we work with in their farms, people are always commenting on how their tomatoes actually taste like tomatoes. And it always surprises me when kids, you say you want a tomato, you want a lettuce, you want some of this or that or the other vegetable, and they go, "Ew, no, that tastes horrible." And then you give them some of the biologically raised, the organic but properly made compost, so even the organic folks could have a little improvement because the compost they're making has a lot of these toxic chemicals in it. You've got to go that one step further, and what will really blow you away is that it takes less time for us to make compost correctly than it takes to make what would you would we call that material? Putrefied organic matter, and try to do something with it. It's just so impossible as a material. It's like, yeah.
Yeah, I've accidentally made some of
Disgusting.
that in the past as well. Like, oh, this doesn't look like compost.
Well, I was reading books by the fathers of soil science and going through, and I was reading work by the person who's the father of genetics. They were all growing plants, and it surprised me how so many of them understood with only a microscope to look at these things. They were understanding that all of these organisms were so very important. But we lost that understanding as we start through some of the really horrific wars that we've had. The amount of knowledge that's been lost
Oh, yes.
about is just, You read Dr. Montgomery's, David Montgomery's book on these things, and it's just amazing that humanity managed to make it through to this far along.
No kidding. No kidding. And it's, there are times where I've said, I feel like I'm living among a suicide cult, you know? This is like people are so, not just people, but corporations and sometimes governments and sometimes for profit, like Tyson Chicken or whatever. I just feel like it's a suicide cult because so much is just not sustainable. You only have so much soil assets, let's say. You only have so much fossil water. And if you don't harness these resources and protect them, you do eventually run out, and we might be at a tipping point in some ways, it seems, pretty soon. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you look at the weather, and we've had an increase of 100% of the number of tornadoes across the United States, and it's just getting worse and worse with every passing year. It's the change in the difference in temperature between the North Pole and the equator, and as those two bodies of wind and rain get smack it up. It's just horrific what's going to be done to the surface of the soil. That part of what we're doing to ourselves is going to force us to live underground.
Oh,
And
wow.
yeah,
Well, I
because.
mean, I've even noticed, I've lived in Texas for a while, and there used to be springs everywhere in central Texas. Those springs are gone, and then I look how they've clear-cut the coastal regions for farmland, and I think, well, gosh, isn't it important for trees to respirate, to reintroduce water into the more inland regions? And people say, oh, we don't have enough water here. Well, that's because they're clear-cutting to the south. You
That's
know?
right. Yep, absolutely. And just all the things that we're doing selfishly with no care for the planet. And I almost feel like people who are extremely rich should be looked down at. They're not returning enough of the money to those people that made that money, that millionaire. And we should treat people as pariahs even if they're not doing enough to give back to the society that made them rich.
Well, I feel like we need to redefine wealth entirely, And I mean, here I am, I'm in my suit, which is just here in the studio, but when I go home, I'm in my ranch garb, and I have my goats, I have my backyard chickens, I have my rescue donkeys, gathering eggs or cleaning out the chicken coop sometimes, which is no fun, or take care of my dogs or whatever. And I feel like that feels real. That's the real world. Like, that's where I live. Like, this is where I'm on stage to talk to the world and try to introduce them to the reality that I go back to. You know what I mean? But so much
And
that's public is, technology and money is so artificial. What's real is when you get back and you're growing food.
yep, and I don't understand what really calls people to live that lifestyle of, well, we must have the yacht so that
Oh, yeah.
we can steam over to wherever it is we want to go and try to impress everybody. Not real people when they do that. So
No, it's funny because I have been invited to go to speak at events, and they say I'll be invited, like, oh, we'll put you up in this luxury place and you'll have these luxury meals and this and that. And I'm like, how is that any better than where I live every day? Because I have fresh, clean water. I have fresh chicken eggs. I make smoothies. I mean, I can't get that at your luxury resort. Doesn't exist.
And it's like I always worry about drinking water from, well, certainly wouldn't do it from the faucet in the bathroom.
Sure.
Yeah, I'm not even sure about the bottles that, plastic and you unwind them because they sure could be giving us a story that had, it looks clean and pure, but that doesn't give you much information anymore these days.
Yeah, exactly. And really, none of us trust the big corporations anymore, the Nestles of the world that are taking over the water supplies. And we all have huge questions about that. But I think And what I'd like to focus on here for the last few minutes with you, and thank you for taking the time with us. This is really fascinating. But we need to boil down some simple ways for people to start into this. So I guess they can go on your website, they can read, they can learn. Do you have a video channel anywhere where people can watch some of your lectures, things like that?
No, because that's what's in the foundation
the course?
Courses.
Okay.
Yeah. And then after you finish making compost extract and compost tea, we're going to get you on the microscope and start teaching you what all of the beneficial organisms are. So you can identify them for yourself. So here's what you really need to know. And you can go anywhere and start helping other people just by knowing what is really beneficial. Sets of microorganisms, the food web is very beneficial. And then you're going to have problems. You're going to have, these are diseases. You've got to do something to fix your dirt, because if you don't have organisms in your soil, you can't do anything with it. You're going to have to put on inorganic fertilizers and pesticides, and then you're going to eat that.
Yeah.
About
the microscopy, what magnification is even needed? I mean, does a person need a super expensive microscope, or can just a couple $100 scope will work?
Yep. So, somewhere between $250 to maybe $350 for the microscope, and then the camera that goes
right
with. You only need magnification up to a 40x IP or nose piece.
That's great.
Objective lens. So that's it's not that expensive. We have some students in the course that really loved having just perfectly beautiful and sharp images, so they buy cameras that are a bit more spendy, but
yeah,
you don't have to do that.
Well, I want to try this. I'm fascinated, because we in our lab, you know, we have a mass spec lab, and we have a $100,000 microscope that does it's got a lens that goes to 2000x, which is, at that point, you don't even know what you're looking at. It's
yeah,
just,
for you,
there's
to,
a blob, you know.
Yeah, I think the outside of the blob is out here, and I'm
right,
looking at, I know, what is that, the stomach?
Yeah, I can't tell, but you're right. I mean, but I can't wait to do this. I'd love to learn some of your material. I'd love to help share this news with others and get them on board with what you're doing and put it into practice, because I was planning on planting some corn this year, and I just, you know, again, the traditional way was, oh, you need to till it. You know, plow that field, till that sucker. And I just
make sure all those weed seeds are right here on top. And
I know. It feels like I'm going to be just growing milk thistle all everywhere to reclaim the dirt, which is what they're good at doing, I've noticed. But
yep,
how do I grow corn without doing all that?
You've got to make certain that you get a fungal dominated or an equal biomass of fungi to bacteria. And that's what the composting is all about, is getting the right bacterial fungal ratios.
Uh-huh.
So you can mix that into the soil, lay it down on the surface, and then apply a compost extract to it. So it helps move things down deeper and deeper. And typically your compaction layers are going to, in the top 3 feet, are going to disappear in the first year, because all these cute little critters are reforming all of those aggregates. They make the glues to make the aggregates, and so there's all kinds of different sizes. Water infiltrates, goes straight down instead of running off as erosion.
Uh-huh, right.
So down deeper, then you've got all these cute organisms that make the open areas where the water will fill it up to half of its height. And so there's your source of water during a dry, dry season up above.
Wow.
Some people have looked at how old is some of this old, ancient water. And it's in, you know, just unbelievably high thousands of years that drop of water has been sitting there waiting for a root to come along and take it if the plant needs it.
Wow.
Yet the plants have never needed it.
But this is
how I interpret that.
This is just revolutionary, what you're saying. I mean, it means that, you know, Because right now I've talked about, you know, the Haber-Bosch process and how right now about half the planet is living off of nitrogenous fertilizers, most of which are, you know, created from natural gas. And what you're saying is that we don't need that natural gas to create, ammonia and then nitrogen fertilizers. If we do this soil approach, then we could have food security and food abundance without dependence on the hydrocarbons.
Yep.
That's amazing.
Yep. We don't need those big chemical companies anymore. It's been, I don't know, how do they live with themselves sometimes is how I think of it.
Yeah.
Because they've pulled the blanket over people's eyes for hundreds of years.
Well, and... You know, BASF is actually shutting down in Germany, by the way, because there's no more natural gas there, because of what's happening with the conflict. But I feel like we're at a point in human history where a lot of farmers are going to be forced to look at regenerative farming because the other inputs, I mean, the supply chain of those inputs is literally collapsing.
And we have documentation of people who have been working with us that have followed their techniques, and in the first year of growing on like 10,000 acres in the Hudson River Valley in New York State, per acre they would have to pay $160 for the inorganic fertilizer that they.
That's
and that
low
was just,
from what I'm hearing now. Yeah, that's low.
Yeah, but when in the similar, you know, right next door where they put in the biology, they only had to spend $20 per acre.
And they got similar yields?
They doubled or tripled the yield.
That's amazing. And I imagine they have more disease resistance and more drought resistance and so on.
Right. You don't need pesticides because they're resistant. The plants are resistant to it. If we found a place where some weird, strange microorganism came along and started growing, I think we could just as rapidly take out that organism, but we do it through methods that nature has been doing for the last billion years.
Right.
I think she's had a little practice to get this together, you know, and so we spray with something with a highly diverse, has all these different kinds of organisms, and we have never had the case where if it's done correctly, we don't have a disease-causing organism that escapes.
Wow. So, okay, let me mention this too, because I'm finally putting the pieces together here. What you do is you train people to actually have a whole new career in being soil experts that help other people solve their problems with soils, right?
Yep. Or if you want to stay home and develop a farm, you could go to Saturday markets or, you know, Wednesday markets and sell your materials as regenerative ag. And people recognize that it's a certain set of practices that are, without pesticides, no inorganic fertilizers, taste much better, they're disease resistant, they're exactly what your digestive system needs on the inside. So it's a, we could start changing things. We have started changing things around at a fairly huge level.
Yeah. Well, we're going to have to. I mean, it's obvious at this point. If we don't change, we don't make it. You know, I mean, this current course that we're on is just, it doesn't sustain. You can kind of pillage the land for some short period of time, and then you collapse. And you know, we have the history of other civilizations that collapsed, like Easter Island and so on, or the Anasazi Indians, Southwest America, modern day America. If you don't take care of the ecosystems, you do collapse, and it can happen to us too, folks.
Yep. You look at all of the civilizations in Africa and South America and the Asia, Southeast Asia, in the islands. Think of the fact that Mongolia was once a forested land, and you look at it today, and it's just like moonscape. Couldn't we get that back into production? And John DeLue is showing that absolutely we can. We can take that sand And we get the biology back into that material, a little organic matter. So take your waste materials, turn it into good compost. And they've resuscitated entire valleys in China. So, you know, we got to get this. We got to lead the charge on all of this. We need to get going on it and really show people. And it's really those demonstrations that are needed. People tend to not believe that it's possible. That all those professors that they so admired when they were at school, now discovering that those people were lying to them.
Yeah, or they were just speaking out of complete ignorance. But, you know, it's interesting to me, being someone who's, I'm into, you know, health and nutrition and disease prevention, but it's the same paradigm shift where if you take care of your microbes in your gut and in your body, then you have all these beneficial properties and you don't need all these chemical interventions. And the soil works the same way.
And once you get those organisms back into the places they're supposed to be, and you feed them the normal sets of foods, they'll stay there forever. Uh-huh. You don't have to keep replenishing them. Same thing with in your garden. If you get these really good organisms in the soil, you treat them properly, they're going to be there forever.
Wow.
So you don't have to go around paying $20 an acre in order to you know, get some of the materials that you need to get your plants to grow.
Right.
So
nature does, I mean, the energy comes from the sun, the microbes do their work for free. Obviously, we don't have to pay them royalties, and you don't have to go buy them at Home Depot.
Exactly.
Thank goodness. All right. Well, this is really mind-blowing stuff. I'm so intrigued. No wonder Kevin was speaking so highly of you and saying that we got to get together and have this conversation. Any final thoughts you want to leave us with today? But I mean, I hope we can talk to you again. This is amazing.
Absolutely. Go and take a look at some of the featured success stories where, you know, people have started with dirt and very quickly turned it into real soil with all of these benefits that we've been talking about today. We're actually missing some of the, you know, there's when I started out working, I could very rapidly see that we had at least five different ways that the plant would be more productive and better nutrition for us. Today, we're up to 11 factors that we can get properly produced once again within your soil, and the plant just doubles and triples in the amount of produce that it makes, and the best tasting, because nutrition, the good foods inside that what you're going to eat tastes so delicious that, you know, even the kids that would make a face when you say you got to eat your broccoli or you got to eat your beets or you've got to eat those cooked carrots. They don't shrivel up their nose at the thought of eating it anymore once it's been grown in proper soil.
Right. I get it. I mean, the strength, the energy of the plant allows the plant to do its job of synthesizing more and more things. And let me just share this with you, Dr. Elaine, because even, you know, I've had conversations with people, simple conversations like, okay, you're eating a tomato. And they're like, yes, okay. You know that tomato contains lycopene, right? And they're like, yeah. And like, where does the lycopene come from? And a lot of people think, well, it must come out of the soil. I'm like, no, the plant makes it. It makes it. It synthesizes out of hydrogen, carbon, and oxygen. And that, I think that's all. HCO is probably all that's in lycopene. Vitamin C, same thing. You name every carotenoid, every antioxidant, the plant makes it. So it's using energy to synthesize the nutrients that you need as a human being. It doesn't have to be added to the soil. No one's spraying vitamin C on the soil to grow oranges, you know?
That's right. Yep. And yet they're not taught enough about the biochemistry of life. And so, you know, it's probably another course that we need to add into the list of courses at the school. But we'll get there soon enough.
Very cool. Well, this is just amazing. You're opening my eyes, and I'm having a great time talking with you. So I appreciate you taking the time.
Great. Thank you very much for offering me the time out of your busy work. Yep, so.
Well, I should be busy. I should be back on the ranch, actually growing compost, it seems like. But I'll do the best I can. Thank you for your time, and we'll be in touch.
Okay, thank you.
All right. And for those of you watching, again, the website is soilfoodweb.com. And again, just a fascinating interview. Feel free to repost this interview, of course, on other channels or other platforms. You have our permission to do so. And most importantly, get hands-on, people. Even if you don't know where to start, start with something. Start growing something. Start composting something. Save your kitchen scraps. You know, I mean, just get started. Grow something, but do it in pots on the windowsill if that's all you have, or on the back patio, but start somewhere. This is how we get to food redundancy and sustainability as a civilization. I'm Mike Adams, the founder of Brighteon, and I appreciate you watching today. And dig into it, folks. This is how we're gonna save our future together. Thanks for watching, take care. Today's interview is brought to you by two important sponsors related to food production. The first one is arkseedkits.com. It's right here, this is the canister on my desk. ARK, arkseedkits.com. They have heirloom, you know, non-GMO seeds that you can save after you plant them and grow them. You can save them multiple generations of seeds. This is critical. You've got to have a seed bank. ArkSeedKits.com can get you that. Use discount code RANGER for savings on some of their products, not everything that are already on sale, but some of the other products. Try RANGER. And then also from Marjorie Wildcraft, her website is definitely worth visiting, ICanGrowFood.com. If you go there, you're going to get her free webinar, and you can just sign up and watch that for free. Marjorie Wildcraft, who has been a frequent guest on my show, she teaches you how to grow a lot of food in a small amount of space. She says the equivalent of three parking spaces, you can grow a significant portion of your own food. And this is critical for off-grid survival and sustainability, and also, you know, growing your own medicine as well, because medicine comes from plants. So check it out, ICanGrowFood.com, and also ArkSeedKits.com. With these two things, you're going to have a lot of knowledge that can help keep you alive in the hard times that are already here. Thanks for watching. A global reset is coming, and that's why I've recorded a new 9-hour audiobook. It's called The Global Reset Survival Guide. You can download it for free by subscribing to the naturalnews.com email newsletter, which is also free. I'll describe how the monetary system fails. I also cover emergency medicine and first aid and what to buy to help you avoid infections. So download this guide. It's free. It's my gift to you simply because I want like-minded people to survive.